You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Let's get this out of the way from the very, very, very beginning. Baby deer, they are super cute. They are so adorable that you might be tempted to pet one. Of course, most of us know that you shouldn't, but what if you happen to find a fawn all alone? No mama, no other deer in sight. Despite what your instincts might be telling you, most of the time the answer is nothing. Just do nothing. Joining us to explain why it's usually best to just leave wild animals alone is Dave Cook with Sierra Wildlife Rescue in El Dorado County, which serves as a statewide fawn rehabbers work group, amongst other things, of course. Though he's headquartered in El Dorado County, Dave is active in a dozen counties around our area and is gearing up for yet another busy season, which is just around the corner. With that, Dave, welcome to Insight.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here.
I learned something new yesterday, that there are fawn rehabbers in the world. What sparked the fawn rehabbing bug? How did this all begin?
Well, you know, it was really an accident. I had signed up with Sierra Wildlife Rescue to be a volunteer. We're an all-volunteer group. And I was in our center feeding baby songbirds. Call came in about a fawn hooked on a fence, and they couldn't find the fawn person. So I told them, well, I'll go and get it off the fence. I won't know what to do with it afterwards, but let's get it off the fence, barbed wire fence. And so I went out and picked it up off the fence and fell in love. So 25 years later, I'm still rehabbing fawns.
Why have you been doing it for 25 years and counting?
Well, you know, it's really rewarding work. Like all animal rescue work, it's difficult physically, financially, emotionally. But it's so rewarding. And when you see a wild animal run back into the woods that you know would have died if you had not taken care of it and returned it to the wild, that's pretty rewarding.
Yeah, it's an incredible experience, and one that I'm happy that you're part of and you get to experience time and time again over the last 25 years. Is it now peak time for fawn season, or are we just on the cusp of it?
We're on the cusp of it, although picture it as a wave. The fawns start being born every year about April on the coast, May in the valley, and then June in the foothills. So it's coming at us. The first fawns have already been born on the coast, but they're coming our way.
What does it look like for you, someone who, you know, lives and breathes, you know, fawns, come May, and when we get more inland to fawn season, are there just a lot of them around?
Well, they're all born at the same time because, like most prey species, that's how they survive, and the predators can't eat them all at the same time. So they tend to come out in big groups, and then the phone starts ringing off the hook for fawn rehabbers because that's when people see them alone and think they need help.
When does a fawn actually need help?
Well, there's two kinds. One is an orphan and one is an injured that may need help. But the orphan question is the one, and you referenced it a little bit earlier, that most of the time when people see a fawn alone, it's not an orphan and it doesn't need to be rescued. But people don't understand that moms leave them alone for hours at a time to avoid attracting predators because they're too weak to have any chance of running off. So the mom goes off and feeds and leaves the fawn alone. People find it alone, think it's been abandoned. And it's not. It's just waiting for mom to come back with a meal.
Although well-intentioned, I mean, obviously that ultimately harms the fawn.
Yeah.
Do you come across that often each season?
Yeah, every season. June's the big season for birth in the foothills. That's when the phone starts ringing off the hook. More than 80% of the calls that I get, and they usually say abandoned, 80% of the abandoned or orphan fawns are not. We monitor for a while, mom shows up, and we close the books on that one. So way over 80%, it's not an orphan. But there's 20% that are. So we have to take every call seriously.
I would also imagine that if you're a mama deer and you go back and your fawn isn't there because, you know, a well-intentioned person picks them up, you know, to basically takes them away from the location where the mama deer expected them to be, how crucial is it for that bonding time? How crucial is it for a fawn to need a mama deer in order to survive?
To survive, yeah. Well, it's absolutely crucial, first, not to disturb the scene. So that's why people should always call a rehabber first rather than just jump out and grab the fawn. But if they have already grabbed it and then call us, we can put it back. The good news is deer are not one of those kind of animals where the mom is repulsed by human scent. So if you picked one up out of ignorance, call us on the phone. We're going to tell you, go put it back. And then we'll monitor for a while, make sure mom does show up and it's not an orphan. Although there are signs that can tell us that it may be an orphan. Mm.
When are some circumstances where things just head south? You know, you try to interfere, you disturb the area, and then the fawn just doesn't fare well after.
Well, it depends. You know, it's so individual to the fawn itself. Some animals react okay with problems in their environment. Others stress out and weaken and do poorly. But again, you know, for the public, if they ever see a scene like that or think something's amiss, if they contact somebody like me, an experienced rehabber, that then evaluates the situation, and we know, can we leave the animal there? Can we move it just a little ways away, like if there's construction going on? Or does it need to be scooped up and put in the rehab environment? Mm.
I would imagine your job during this time is very challenging and also really busy. The phone must be ringing off the hook.
It rings off the hook. And what happens a lot is that people tend to hit deer with their car at night. So it rings, it's 7x24, it's around. So a lot of times there's no debate about if it's an orphan, if there's a dead mom on the side of the road and the fawn is hanging out by mom's body.
When the fawn is in fact an orphan, what can you do as a fawn rehabber?
Well, there's two things. One is protect it. So we bring it into rehab. It'll be in a pen. It'll be protected from predators. And we feed it appropriate things. It's one of the reasons why people shouldn't do it themselves. They should call a rehabber. Partly it's illegal if you don't have a license from Fish and Wildlife to do rehabbing. But, of course, we have the license. But also we have the appropriate food. We use a formula that's designed to duplicate doe's milk. So it's almost as good as what mom makes. Whereas people, and sometimes they do this, they pick up the fawn, they think it's starving, they go to the refrigerator. What's in the refrigerator? Cold, low-fat cow's milk, normally. So they pour that down the fawn, probably aspirate it because they don't have the right bottle of nipple, and then it's the wrong thing, and now the fawn has diarrhea. And so then even if it isn't an orphan, we often have to step in and take one.
Yeah, and not only having an upset stomach, it's stressed out.
Yeah, and the stresses. What's interesting, though, the when fawns are first born, they're not afraid of humans. They don't become afraid of humans until they get old enough, 2-3 weeks old, follow mom around, and then they see mom run every time she sees a human, and then they figure out, oh, those two-leggeds are bad, and then they learn to be afraid of humans. But the first couple of weeks, they aren't naturally afraid of humans.
Hmm. When you get a call, because you got to make this decision on your own that, hey, I believe that this fawn has been abandoned, and you say, okay, leave it alone. Just tell me where it is. Do not touch it. And you go yourself. How do you determine if, in fact, that fawn is orphaned and mama's just not out for a few hours?
Yeah, there's two things. A fawn that's doing fine, a young one will just hunker down in the weeds and hope you go away. The spots and its lack of scent or its protection from predators. And so it just hunkers down, hopes whether you're a coyote or a human that you don't notice it and you leave. But if the fawn is up wandering around and crying, and by crying, I don't mean tears, I mean crying out. Deer are not normally very vocal animals, but if it's crying out, that's a bad sign. Walking around crying, and if it's okay, I'll play this. Here's what a fawn sounds like. Let's see.
And this is the fawn that's actually orphaned and is.
I'm hoping
crying
to,
out for mama.
That's what I'm hoping to play here.
That just breaks your heart.
Isn't that a sad sound? And now there are times where a fawn does a little bit of that. Maybe mom's running late with the meal. Maybe she was chased by a predator and she's at the far end of the county. So she's coming back to deliver a meal kind of late and the fawn's getting hungry. And so if you see a one wandering around, a little bit of crying, then we're not sure. But if the crying gets louder, more frequent, more plaintive, it's kind of intuitive, the worse it sounds, they're saying, I'm not just hungry because mom's late, I'm starving out here. And that's a bad sign. Mm. There is one final test, and then I want to tell you about something that's not a test. The final test that really tells you, no, this has got to be an orphan. It's what we call the dirty butt test. Because every time the mom feeds the fawns, she grooms it, and that includes making it, you know, defecate and cleaning around there because the fawn doesn't know how to do that. If you lift up the tail and there's fecal material around the anus, mom hadn't been there for a long time, bad sign, got to be an orphan. That's the ultimate. But there you have to be up close to the fawn. Watching to see what the fawn does, wandering around crying, is a better test because you can do it from a distance, because you don't want to walk right up to it the first time you notice it and do the dirty butt test, because you may walk up just as mom's coming back. And the fawn may not run off, but the mom will. Yeah. And you've just interrupted the meal.
Mm. Yeah. What happens, because I come into, if you're camping or hiking, you can come into, you're on the river, you yeah. can come into contact with deer all the time. And I think people have the urge to touch and to pet, which you're not supposed to do. Can you explain why you're not supposed to touch a deer?
Yeah, you know, part of it is just what I said. If you're touching the fawn, again, the mom may have just been coming up to deliver a meal. So you may have derailed a meal delivery system. But to the fawn itself, why, if it's young enough, it may not be stressed too much. The older they get, the more stressed they would be by that. But the other thing is, even though a human scent may not repel the mom, if you have on cologne or perfume or any other lotion and you rub that on the fawn as you pet it, it won't necessarily repulse the mom, but now the coyote can find it easier because it's got scent. And remember, scentless and the camouflage yeah. of the spots are what keep it unnoticed by predators.
You know, you get to see a time in an animal's life that we should not be able to see. You know, it's the yeah. start of their life. As humans, we should keep a distance with that. What does that feel like? I mean, you're doing it to take care of them and to make sure that they have a successful life as they can, you know, given the elements in the wild. That must be a special experience to be a part of time and time again over the last 25 years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it is. You feel like it's a real honor because it's always been fun all through my life to admire and watch wildlife from a distance. But to actually be up close and to see how they act is just, it's an incredible honor, incredible delight. And then again, when you let them go free and they're alive and healthy, when you knew when they came in, otherwise they'd be dead. Because we don't pick up animals that don't need help. But an orphan, up until about 5 weeks of age, they're milk dependent. If we don't scoop them up and then give them that formula I described, they're going to starve to death. And if they're injured so badly that they won't naturally heal without medical assistance, if we don't pick up those injured ones and medicate them, give them care, those would die. So the fact that not only we get to admire them up close, but we get to save their life and then see them run free weeks or months later, yeah, it's priceless.
Yeah, you and volunteers like yourself, I mean, you have an intimate relationship with wild animals, and I think it's important because having that knowledge by actually seeing their behavior and helping them thrive, you know to stay away. Whereas when you don't have that understanding or that information or that education, you know, people can tend to do the opposite. They want to actually be near and touch and take a photo of a wild animal when they shouldn't be doing that. That happens all the time. I mean, you can see posts from, you know, the National Park Service, like, right. Don't get near the bison, you know, don't touch the bear cubs, you know, what have you. But you need that education to know that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why this work, the wildlife rehab, if people have such a strong interest, you should still just, when you're hiking, admire the animals from afar, use binoculars for a closer look. But if you really think you have the pull, you're pulled by this and want to do it, well, contact your local wildlife rehab group. Most of them are all volunteer. We train you, we get you going, we give you the equipment, and then you too can have that up-close experience And again, it's priceless. You know, you don't get paid because you're a volunteer, but you almost feel like you should pay the organization for getting to do it.
You know, given that you're a volunteer, you've been doing this work for such a long time, but we also hear that you're in a transition phase. What is that transition phase, and what does that mean for Sierra Wildlife Rescue and you, who have been affectionately called Dear Dave?
Well, I have, as I've gotten older, and I'm running out of years. I'm thinking, well, I might want to do a couple of things, a little more traveling than I tend to get to do anymore. But you want to hand it off well. Train people. So all the things I've learned over the years, I don't want to just walk out the door and, you know, they're lost. So training new people to know those things and to learn them not with the expensive lessons that I had to pay, because sometimes an animal didn't do well because I did the wrong thing. I'd rather train people, and now I know the right things to do. So I'm not totally out of the mix, but I'm doing more training and mentoring and less of the doing this year, and however long it takes to feel comfortable, I'll walk away.
In the last minute or two that we have, I think it's important to leave the public and listeners with some good 411. Your wildlife rescue organization that you volunteer for is an official one. You are licensed. That's all crucial. You know, how would you help guide someone when they want to rescue an animal, they see it out in the wild, to kind of vet and make sure that they are reaching out to the correct rehab organization, one that's qualified?
Yeah, and it's really easy now because of the internet. So if you don't know, all you have to do, almost every county in California has a wildlife rehab group that's licensed, just like Sierra Wildlife. And so if you just use the internet and say, wildlife rehab group in my county, a name will pop up, give you contact info, or you can go online to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and they have a schedule that shows all the counties, all the wildlife groups, and all the phone numbers, and you just call them. And here in the Sacramento greater area, there's Wildlife Care Association in Sacramento, Gold Country in Placer, Wildlife Rehab and Release in Nevada County. Everyone's got one. Not all of them have full fawn programs, but if they don't, Sierra Wildlife and I are behind them, working with them. Yeah.
I figure you guys are a tight-knit group. You know, if you call one of them and they can't actually do the fawn rehab work, they can point you in the right direction, which is to you and to Sierra Wildlife Rescue.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. We're here for them.
Well, Dear Dave, thank you so much for joining us. I learned a lot.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Dave Cook is with the Sierra Wildlife Rescue, and he was just explaining the do's and don'ts during peak fawn season, which we are approaching here in Sacramento and up in the foothills, and why really the big one is you usually shouldn't touch them, even if they are alone, because likely they are not orphaned. Still ahead, the city of Sacramento is putting a call out for local artists for upcoming murals at Aggie Square in Oak Park. We'll have more information on how you can apply if you are creative. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.